There was no action taken in closed session. Let's turn it over to our student representative, Madeline Baker.
Okay, so for Lyndhurst, they are having their Pride Week, spreading school spirit and creating suspense for Friday's football home game. Dress-up days are as follows leading up to the game. Monday is Class Color Day. Tuesday is Tourist Day. Wednesday is Multicultural Day. Thursday is Rivalry Day, and Friday is Straight Blazin' Friday, with the Lyndhurst Pride Rally held on this day as well. That evening, clubs are selling food and drinks at the Marysville game. On Tuesday, we are holding Lyndhurst's annual Club Rush. This gives students the opportunity to explore and join clubs on campus. Lyndhurst will be holding its annual blood drive on September 30th. For Marysville, September 23rd, we are having our first fashion show, and that's where we display our clothing that we have in our student store. And we're going to announce that we will be selling food and drinks in the student store now, and we'll be selling popcorn, Gatorade, water, and health bars. September 24th, freshman football plays against Sacramento High at 4 o'clock at Sacramento High. September 25th, JV and varsity will be playing against Lyndhurst at 5:30 and 7:30 at Lyndhurst. September 28th, volleyball versus West Campus. September 23rd, we have our senior info meeting with Herf Jones. September 30th, ASB will be having their cookie tree fundraiser from 4 to 7. October 5th, grad night meeting in the library for parents at 3:30 to 7 o'clock. And then October 6th through 7th, we have the Kahissi makeups. And also on the 7th, seniors will be having their panoramics taken. And that's it.
Thank you very much. Okay, that brings to Educational Services presentation, Lenny Tate.
Good evening. Thank you so much for letting me be here to share educational services tonight for 2015-16. It is a big packet, but I'm going to go through it fairly quickly because I am going to let you guys read some of it on your own. Unless you want me to read it to you, I'm happy to do that too. So I spoke with several of the board members and wanted to make sure that I was addressing a lot of the questions that you might have. There's been a lot of changes this year and a lot of new developments coming up. So what I'm going to talk about tonight is specifically the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, and I'm calling it Learning to Fish in the CASP Pond, because I'm going, instead of giving you a bunch of data, I'm going to show you how to go get data, and I hope that you will then contact me and let me know if I can pull specific data for you that you might be interested in. Another thing is focus on professional development, an update on the California State ELA, ELD, and mathematics curriculum, our staff accomplishment in Ed Services, and continuing developments for this 2015-16 school year. To begin with, we're going to go to DataQuest. DataQuest is the storing house for all of the state's assessment and accountability data. If you wanted to go on your own, you would simply go type in on Google if you'd wanted to, DataQuest, or you can use the link that I've provided there. You're going to click on, you can select by many different features, state, district, county, school, to find the data you want if you want to drill down specifically. You can also pick something like the district. Sorry, I hit the wrong button there. So let's click on that link. Raul took care of this for me to make sure it would open. Thank you, Raul. So basically here at DataQuest, I go to district. And again, you could go to any of the other options if you wanted to. There's no password required. There's lots of different types of information you can find on this website, but the one I'm going to talk about specifically tonight is the CASP test results. Those are the results that were just released to students and districts this month. So when you get to this page, you have a couple options. You can go to last year's data. You're only going to find the CSTs for science because that's all that we were required to do last year under CASP. This year in 14-15, we have all of our ELA, math, and science results. And I just type in the name of the school district. Hit submit because I want the language arts and math for right now. I'm not going to go to the science. And I just want to give you a brief overview of what this looks like. So I'm now on the CASP website. When I scroll down, I'm in Marysville. And right now I'm looking at all students. And I can tell just by looking right here on this button right here. I could also pull it up by subgroups under that tab as well. So right now I'm under all students. I'm looking at English language arts. And I'm just going to focus, just for the sake of this presentation and speed to get you guys home tonight. I'm just going to look at eighth grade. And I'm going to look at the cells that we're seeing in eighth grade. If you hover over each of the cells, it's going to show us that in eighth grade overall in the district, 4% of our students are exceeding the standards. 25% are meeting the standards. 34% are nearly meeting the standards. And 36% of the eighth graders are not meeting the standards at all. So that's for language arts. What I would do next, I'm going to click on this all students button. It actually, oh, yes.
It's nearly. Nearly meeting the standards.
Thank you for asking that question, because there's another button right here.
Like so many points below? Or?
Yep. So in regards to eighth grade, what standard nearly met means is the student has nearly met the achievement standard and may require further development to demonstrate the knowledge and skills in English language arts literacy needed for likely success in entry-level, credit-bearing college coursework after high school. So even back at eighth grade, they're saying that if the students aren't mastering these set standards at this point, if they're nearly meeting them, they're going to be struggling to the next grade level to master those standards as well. So most likely we're going to have to provide some intervention for those kiddos. When you're looking at a standard not met, we're looking at some critical intervention that's going to need to take place for those kiddos. You're welcome. Please do that as well. Just ask questions as we go along. So what I did right just a second ago is I clicked on all students, and what that does is it opens up another window. And again, I'm just going to focus on eighth grade, which is this column right here. And it gives you more detail on what's happening. 606 of our eighth graders were tested. That is 95% of the student body in eighth grade. Again, it goes down and it shows you those same percentages we talked about earlier. You can click on this button and it explains to you the scale scores for eighth. And you can see that for each grade level they change. They actually, as you would expect, go up in nature, the scaled scores. Okay, going back to view reports. So I'm not going to go into the math or any of that. I can scroll down here to the actual areas within the language arts so you can see how students are doing. Instead of having the four areas that we just talked about, we're now down to three areas, and it talks about above standard, at or near standard, and below standard. And when you look at these numbers, they do appear more positive. So when you look at eighth grade again, now you're seeing something like 60% of students are at or near or above standards, and 40% of our students are below standard. So it's a different way to look at those specific areas. And again, you're comparing our students to the state average in those pieces in regard and the scaled score. So everyone has to master that scaled score. That's why the state has its average set where its average is set at. Going back up. That's where I was. Okay. What you can do here is you can go into the subgroups. And I was going to go into several of the subgroups, but I'm just going to go to one again just for time's sake. I'm going to go down to parent education because it is true when you go in to look at the data for eighth grade, economic resources, they do make a significant difference for students. Your redesignated English learners are actually showing the greatest skills right now in meeting the standards. And our English learners are the ones that are struggling in the language fluency area. But going down here, so in parent education, I didn't hit select. Sorry, I'm still over in all students. Okay, so there's some more drop-down menus. You can look at what if the child has parents that are not high school graduates. High school graduates, they have some college, they're a college graduate, maybe they've gone to graduate school, or maybe they've declined to answer the question. It's going to tell you exactly how many parents signed up that they were not high school graduates, as well as how many parents said they declined to state, whether they were one of these categories. Again, we're looking at English language arts. Not a high school graduate, again, just looking at eighth grade, pretty scary. So pretty much, if this was all the data you looked at, you would pretty much see that if your parent didn't graduate high school in our district in eighth grade, you did not exceed the standards in eighth grade. So it's an impact. It's not an excuse. It does have an impact on our students, and it means that there's a big, huge hole there that we have to help fill to ensure that those eighth graders get even more support so that they can master those standards. Going back down here. Sorry, I need to go through all those pieces. I'm just going down to these areas again. Looking at if just a little bit of college, the difference that could make. So you can see now we're at 8% and 30%. Now we're at 38%. but students whose parents have graduated college, who have gone through the process of education, 17% and 29%. And that's eighth grade again. Oh, did I hit? Yeah, and that's eighth grade. So you can see the difference for kiddos. So again, there's a lot. You'd have to spend a lot of time to look at all of this data. I'm happy. Amy Stratton, who works in my department and is wonderful with data, we are both happy to pull any type of data you would like to look at that could help support our students and help give us ideas for how to support our students in doing that. Okay, I'm going to jump out of DataQuest. Do you have any questions on DataQuest? Okay, so the PowerPoint has the website if you need to find it. For not a high, for which, okay, let's go down there. Sorry, I have to kind of like, some college, and then right below it is college degree. And that was, of our students, 41. And when you looked, I want to, back on eighth grade, when you looked at not graduated from high school, I think it was around 100. Some college, let's go up there and look at that one real quick. It makes a difference for our kids, and we know that already, and we know that our district suffers in regards to those resources, and part of that is building the relationships with the community and the stakeholders to make sure that we can fill those holes the best we can here in our district. And every day our teachers are out there on those front lines doing that. I know you have all seen that happening out there. We just have to maintain our focus in regards to what we want our students to be able to achieve, and whatever resources we have, we take those resources and we push them towards that focus. Any other questions before I leave this site? And please, give me a call. I would love to walk you through this further if you're interested in doing that. I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. Okay. Oh, we're going forward, sorry. Okay. The focus of professional development so far to support our subgroups has been in the area. We've had several different trainings that we've really focused on over the course of the years. A couple of these are new this year. Going down, I'm going to actually show you what happened. One of the board meetings in June, Mr. Rex wanted to know what the data was for our professional development in regards to responses from our participants. So I pulled some of that data together. And when you look at Project GLAAD, I think this was, my guess was that this is the training he was specifically thinking about when he was asking that question. You'll have to correct me if that's not true, Mr. Rex. But in June, only 62% of our participants had a positive response to Project GLAAD. And that was because they were in an environment that had absolutely no air conditioning. It was warm. And the presenters that we had two presenters there that did not come up to par to what our teachers expect out of trainers and how they expect to be treated and the activities they expect to be doing. We expect a lot out of the presenters that we bring to our district. So what we did immediately, did a little intervention of our own, spoke to Project GLAAD, and then in August when the training came back, you can see that we went from 62% to, thank goodness, 98% positive responses, of which 73% said it was excellent. So that made us really happy, because we do, that is a huge concern of ours, that we are meeting the needs of our teachers to provide all those resources and all that funding towards these endeavors, and then to have it not do as well as we hope that it would do is, needless to say, frustrating. Moving down, we also did project-based learning. Project-based learning is basically teaching students how to learn to learn. And it's what it is. It's project-based. They're going through the actual activities and applying what they're learning as they're learning to continue to further that growth. And again, 91% of our folks had a positive response to that. 96% for our Right Steps training, that's our new writing program that we have at the elementary level. We bought it specifically to focus on the needs of our English learners and to help close that achievement gap, and what we found is that it's actually very beneficial for all the students in our district. California Kindergarten Association, this is one of those trainings. Actually, the presenter's name was Heidi Butkus, and she came and did 2 days' worth of training for our K to first grade teachers. I had wanted to start to work on maybe providing and hosting trainings for districts outside of our area, and maybe at some point working, because we put a lot of effort and energy into these, if we could find a way to somehow maybe glean a little more funding in our coffers through outside groups to bring in and help us support our professional development, we wanted to do that. So probably about 50% of the participants were our teachers, and 50% were teachers from around the area. We had teachers that came all the way from Orange County, all the way up into Shasta County. They traveled to see this training, so that was really exciting. We did not, this was not one where we did it for profit. We actually hosted it, and the prisoners did all of the prep work for us and provided all of the registration. Next generation science standards, only 88%, which it seems like a high number, but in this case, we had about 11% of our folks that didn't think it was as dynamic a training as we would want it to be. So what we're going to do now, and what we'll do with all of these trainings, is take this information back to our teachers, back to our principals, and ask them and have them look at the comments that were also associated with these numbers that we generated, so that we can find out what made that next generation science standard not as exceptional for those 11% of folks as we would hope that it would. And then what we can do is, this is a county office of education, we could absolutely work with them, and I know that they would do whatever they could to help us make that even better, because the next generation science standards are something that are definitely in our future. They're here and they're in our future in regards to adopting new materials for science. Mathematics, we're looking at what you just approved last year for our students to use, GoMath and Carnegie. Really exciting, 99% of our folks were happy with that training, with 72% thinking it was excellent. Illuminate, 97%. Carol Jago came, again, another one that came through the teachers to be, our teachers went to a conference or went to trainings and saw Carol Jago, came back saying this is something we need in our district. We were able to bring it to the district, and obviously our teachers know what they're talking about, 100% positive participant response, with 86% saying it was an excellent presentation. She focused on model lessons, evidence-based inquiry, all of the pieces that are tied directly to our English language arts materials, as well as other content areas. And so, of course, we'll want to try to continue to work with Carol Jago and bring her back again to further the work that she's done with our teachers. Overall professional development, 90% positive. That's good. Not as good as we'd want it. I'm 100% right there, so we're working on that. Moving down, these are the different areas that we trained this year. We have offered 126 trainings across the district over the course of the year, with approximately 19,000 hours of teacher time, teacher professional development time. So, and I thought it might be easier to read if we sorted it by where we put our energies and our resources in those trainings. So we spent a great deal of time building instructional resources. Those would be your benchmarks and your report cards, those pieces. It's more than just building the tool on those benchmarks and report cards. It's actually the process the teachers go through, the standards they have to understand, the dialogue they have in regards to how they're going to pace those standards. So it's a great deal of work on the part of our teachers to make all of these trainings happen. Moving forward. Do you have any questions on the trainings? I'm moving forward out of professional development. Okay. Just a little, this was something I thought about giving to you on a piece of cardstock, something that I probably want to post on the district website. Basically, what are we doing in 2015-16, and where are we headed in 2015-16 in regards to building capacity, our expectations for our assessments, and then the current resources that we have for both math and language arts is going to be on the next one. Where we're moving forward with math is implementing the current California state standards with our new math curriculum, looking at teacher articulation tied to professional development, using offering high-quality first instruction, not having to reteach. At this point, we're in a spot where we're really doing a lot of intervention, and we want to start to build ourselves out of the intervention business and into the high-quality, the first time we teach them, type of training, and we want to offer our teachers that professional development that helps them do that, to deliver instruction. We want to offer a blended program in regards to professional development. That's part of what we're doing with our teacher-led academies that some of you have talked to me about. We also want to do follow-up workshops in curriculum pacing, GoMath, Carnegie, basically all of the mathematics areas that we've been working on so far for the last 2 years or so, to build our teachers' strength in using the Common Core. In regards to Common Core, our teachers are much more knowledgeable in regards to ELA and math content area, but they still need a lot more input. They've only had one full year with the new math curriculum, and this year they're going to be bringing in a new ELA, ELD curriculum. So there is a learning curve tied to letting go of a curriculum you've been using for so many years and bringing on a new curriculum. They have to learn the curriculum themselves. They have to learn the strategies inside of that. And we have to continue to work on pacing and making sure that we're able to cover all of the areas that are inside of that curriculum. The other thing that we have in regards to what we are doing, expectations for the mathematics assessments. Currently, our assessments are teacher-built assessments, the majority of them inside of Illuminate that our teachers came together over the course of last year and built together. Some of our grade levels are actually using the SBAC interim assessments for their assessments. I'm excited to see how that's going to turn out. The teacher teams decided. They decided if they were going to have performance tasks, if they were going to have multiple choice tests, if they were going to use assessments in their Go Math curriculum. So basically, it was lots and lots of time dedicated to what would give them the best information to help serve their students. That was at that time. We're going to continue to work this year, and what we'll do this year is look at the benchmarks this year to see if there's changes that need to be made for next year that are going to help us get information that's even helps us help our students even more. Again, the mathematic resources we have are the GoMath and the Carnegie. And then where are we headed? I'm not going to read all of those pieces to you. I'm just going to kind of hit those highlights that I have on there. It's about focus on data and intervention, instructional support and coaching of our teachers, refining and revising current resources based on the data we've gathered, and providing professional development during non-instructional time. We want our teachers, there's a couple things we want to do. We want our teachers in the classroom. We've trained them. We want them to be the ones that are in there actually teaching our children. The other thing is that we do suffer from a sub shortage, and it's much easier not to have it offered during the school day than to have teachers have to struggle with having already written lesson plans, getting called back to the classroom, those pieces. So pretty much most of the professional development coming through the district office will be during non-instructional time. I'm going to skip down to ELA because it's very similar on the next one, and I just want you to see the similarities. Going into building expectations for the assessments, we want our assessments to inform instruction. A piece that I did miss on the last one is the district interim assessments, the SBAC assessment, those are one-time, fairly summative assessments. Where we really want the focus to be on are still those formative assessments that those teachers build in their classrooms. That work, that day-to-day work that they do, the classroom observations that they do. That's what they're really telling the information that they're getting. These other assessments, they're big expanses of time before they take the assessment, and then another big expanse of time before they take an assessment. And they need to have ongoing information throughout. Moving down, we want to provide teachers with resources to help them inform instruction so that students are ready for post-secondary education as well as careers. And we really want to enhance communication and collaboration amongst the district, include all stakeholders. And moving forward with the ELA, ELD adoption, looking at it in a little bit different way, starting earlier this year, starting with training of our teachers before we actually get to see the curriculum in January that's coming our way. The state board does not approve the K-8 curriculum until the November-January time period, so we don't actually get to see it until January. But before that, we're going to start meeting with that ELA-ELD recommendation team. To help support them in regards to the framework and what they want to look for in addressing, clarifying the needs of the students in our district and what would be the best program for our students. I know I'm going to have to come back and speak with you guys again because there's just so much information I want to share with you. So I'm keeping myself from saying things, believe it or not. Yes, Mr. Rasmussen. Yes. Yes. Can we or do we? We absolutely do. We have a testing calendar it is extensive. I mean, it goes, if you've taken all of the state assessments, you have a lot of assessments that happen at the high school level, but on the very last page of the testing calendar that we have, and I'll make sure that I can email that out to all the board members, the very last page of that testing document shows where all of our benchmarks are happening for each of those grade levels. For example, at K-1, they do 3 benchmarks a year. It moves up to 6 benchmarks a year, second grade to sixth grade, 4 benchmarks at the middle schools, and so then 4 benchmarks for the middle schools. And then at secondary, it changes a little bit in that we really worked with the 9th and 12th grade teachers to try to fit in a lot of the other assessments they have to do and work around those other assessments and the other features that are happening during the school year so that it actually does. It's a positive experience tied to, as positive an experience as possible, tied to instruction as we can do. It takes time to give assessments. Moving on, just talking a little bit about Amy Stratton, who has been a huge resource in our department. Any type of data you might need, she is there. You could probably talk to any principals. They would say how effective she is in working with their site staff. some high points of what are some focus points that she does. She spends a lot of time in October coming up offering instructional support at the school sites, tied to benchmarks, tied to Illuminate, looking at the CAS data, and I know I'm missing a bunch of other things. She'll be out there working with Accelerated Reader and all of those pieces. The other thing that she does in April that takes up a great deal of her time is preparing sites for the testing and being out at the sites doing professional development on getting ready for the big SBAC test. But you can also see where a lot of her energies lie are tied directly to professional development over the course of the school year. So that's our Amy Stratton. In regards to office management, we have Shelly Garza, we have Mong Yang, and we have Adriana Espinoza. Both of Mong Yang is actually part-time secretary and part-time Hmong translator. Adriana is our Spanish translator, and this is basically just the numbers we did. 126 trainings, the type of work that's tied to that. Field trips, about 350 field trips this year. Translations, about 300 translations, 75 meetings where they translated. For records maintenance and distribution, it's unusual, transcript requests, something that I didn't do before adult ed closed, but now that adult ed has closed, it's amazing how many people come back to get their transcripts. You would never realize 137 people in a year, that's a lot of transcripts. But they're coming back because they're usually looking for jobs. We try to have a 10-day period where we go and find them. A lot of times we have to go dig in old files to try to pull it. Sometimes it's right on the computer. It can be very easy, and it can be very time-consuming. And a lot of times it needs to be done by tomorrow because they're going for a job interview or something like that. We also are handling a lot of the CUME records. Something that came this year is when we closed North Marysville and we reinvented how we were serving our students in those areas. We ended up receiving about 1,200 cumulative records from North Marysville. It's part of that, and then it's part from other sites, but we're now purging those records. And when you purge a record, something that has to take, I'm sorry, I'm going to give you so much trivia tonight. Again, I could talk another time about this. When you purge a cumulative record after, it's usually about 4 to 5 years after students have left high school, you have to maintain the birth certificate, the shot record, and the student's transcript. So a cume that goes from about 3 inches down to very thin that we hold on to for posterity. And then just basically quotes and transfers. Something I thought you might be interested in is we spent about $1.6 million on curriculum last year. About 1.3 of that was out of LCAP for the new Common Core materials that we've been purchasing. The other was for Right Steps, and that came out of Title III. And we received a touched, handled, moved, boxed, reboxed, carried from one school to the other school, still doing it, approximately 18,600 books or so. So that was fun. And saying this, our department works hand in hand with so many other departments to make these things happen. And we have people like Yvonne Sanchez, Kelly O'Rourke, Angela Salcido, all of these folks in these other departments that help us do our job. We wouldn't be able to do it without them to get all of this stuff processed. And I'm missing a ton of people. I feel like I'm at the Emmy Awards or something. Have to thank everybody. This is our I had to show you guys this because I'm really proud of it. This is our new Instructional Networking Academies. Basically, this is teachers who have specific skills that they'd like to share with others are offering academies from 30 minutes to 2 hours about. This is their registration page. They simply click on the registration. They fill out the form. They're registered. They can click on to host, and they could actually be one of the presenters. And then we have folks who they want some information, but they don't necessarily want to be the one that hosts the training. So they can also put out requests for someone else to host a training for them. Right now it's 2 pages long. This is a living document on Google Docs, another adventure that we're moving forward in, trying to get folks on Google Docs. I'll share that with you another time. It's kind of a fun thing to do. Moving forward, things that we're continuing to develop. Sustainability and effectiveness of district-provided professional development. We're going to be digging into a lot of data this year now that we have the new state data here, now that we have some really solid benchmarks that teachers have built and have input and feel powerful about, I believe. I think benchmarks we've done in the past, teachers have built those, but I don't think they've had the buy-in that they have at this time to these benchmarks, but we'll find out over the course of the year. GLAAD mentors. One of the other things that the board had mentioned at another time was a contract that we had with Project GLAAD. We've been contracting outside the district. It gets fairly expensive to bring these trainers in. So this year we actually sent 2 teachers down to the Bay Area to begin the 18-month process of actually becoming GLAAD presenters so that we can actually offer it here in-house. Trying to think. We're going to be offering training in Renaissance learning, mathematics, and English language arts, working with our TK teachers and our brand new teachers. And again, benchmarks and report cards. Looking at testing, CELT is our EL testing. CASP is the missing a P right there, by the way, but that's the state level testing. CAISY or CAHISY, whatever you choose to call it, exit exam. And then the EAP, which is now tied into the SBAC. It's actually the, you guys are making that face like, come on, Lenny, move on. The EAP would actually is a part of the test that students take in order to pre-qualify for certain areas in college. Anybody heard about exit exam going away? It might. Governor hasn't signed it yet. But it could go away. And if it does go away, it's going to go away all the way back to 2003, 2004, and all the way up to 2018. My guess is that the reason why they're choosing 2018 is because by that time, we'll be more fully incorporated into the CASP system, and that type of assessments will be in there. Part of this bill is saying that the state superintendent has to come up with a plan for assessing high school exit or assessing some of those skills that we would have gotten from the high school exit exam. He has until September 30th to sign or veto. If he doesn't veto or sign it, it automatically becomes law. And I think it's really more like, if I'm remembering, I'm not very good at social science, but I'm thinking it's actually, he gets 12 days to do that, so around October 12th, he has until October 12th to get it all done. Music in our programs, and of course I thought I didn't have enough in here already, so I threw this in. Basically just an overview, a very general draft overview of what the LCAP dollars have done for music in our district for this year. It is a fledgling program. We are just beginning, but it's pretty cool to be able to write stuff like that on a form to say we're starting to do music in our district. I have principals and teachers looking at this right now because there are some pieces that they're going to want to fine tune. One thing in particular is that they didn't ask for this, but not all sites are offering each of those pieces that you're seeing. So I put the asterisk that says all course offerings are site-specific, and now I'm working with the principals to generate a specific list so that if you looked at our BOGA, you could see this is what's happening for our K-1s, our 2-3s, and our 4-6s at our BOGA, and so on. Best part. So these are our teachers, and so you can see it much better on your PowerPoint, I think, but these are our professional development days and some of the other training that we did through the district with our teachers working diligently to learn more and more to help support our students. Thank you so much for all of that time. I really appreciate it. Do you guys have any questions?
It's me, Lenny.
What was that?
I have a question. Bernie. One of the biggest complaints I get from the community is that parents are having trouble trying to help their kids at night with their homework because it's so foreign to everything that they've had before. Do we have any training programs for parents?
You know what? I think that is a great idea, and I don't have that on the books to start, but I absolutely think that we should do something like that. There are supports inside of the curriculum for parents, and then at the school site we're doing parent meetings. We've done some math nights last year, but I think that did fall off my radar, and we do need to try to support the parents, because what happens is there's a whole new language with those new, especially with Go Math. Maybe at that, you're probably hearing this more from our elementary teachers, I'm assuming, with the Go Math curriculum. There's whole new descriptions for the device. Basically, you have little counters that they turn over, one side's yellow, one side's red, and they do 2 + 4, 2 yellows + 4 reds = 6. But if parents don't know what a counter is, they're not able to help the kiddos with their homework. So simple little things, half an hour here or there, doing some types of sessions with their parents would be really, really helpful. Does that help? So no is the answer. We're not doing it, but yes, I think we need to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's probably best based at the school site. Parents tend to go to activities at their child's school as opposed to a district-level rollout of those kinds of parent meetings. So certainly something we can encourage with our school sites to have those parent nights where they can come and work with their child and learn some of those new skills and techniques.
And we can support them with that, too. We can help the principals. Sometimes if they're all doing the same thing at different times, we could help them have a plan, and then they don't have to all think of it on their own. The other thing, thank you for bringing that up, because we do have a science night coming up at our BOGA. Edgewater, and I don't have the date right here, but I meant to put that in here as well. So one more thing that I can talk about at another time, but I will also let you guys know when we're having Science Night at Edgewater. For all of the fifth grade students in the district are invited to that, and it's free. It came in on a grant, so we're really excited to offer that for our kiddos. Anything else? Okay, so any celebrations, anything good happening out there? Not yet. You'll get back to me on that one. Okay, thank you so much, gentlemen and ladies.
So
So, Lenny, I did have just a couple of comments. I just want to thank you because the educational service is such an important part. If we want our students to be learning, we have to teach our teachers to be able to teach as well as they can for our students to learn the best they can. The other comment, the instructional networking academies just seems like a great idea. Why not learn from each other?
It's fledgling. It's just starting, but it's been very well received. Folks were a little nervous at first, but I think it's going to turn into something pretty amazing here in our district. So I hope that we continue to get more folks who want to present there. Host.
Also, I appreciate when I've come in, you've explained it to me, different things you're doing, because I was concerned about the number of teachers out of the classroom, and you sat down and showed me how it was graded in that. And you always went through and explained it, and it's obvious you love your job after going through that. And I appreciate the fact that you listened when the issue came up about the field trips at the end last year.
Of course.
And it's obvious you're better dedicated to your job. It's a lot of stats, but it's a lot of, like everybody, everything's got a lot, people have a lot on their plate now, and you're doing a good job of juggling this.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, comments from board members? Mr. Boom?
Just a couple light comments. Lenny, thank you very much. You did a great job on your presentation. And Madeline, thank you for coming. You do a wonderful job for us, too. I really appreciate you coming and the time. You obviously put a little bit of time in getting your reports together, and thank you for that. And congratulations to both high school football teams on a great start, and I look forward to going and watching the game on Friday night.
Mr. Rasmussen?
I would just like to make a comment to the principals that I really appreciate the monthly newsletters that we get. That is our way to know what's going on. And I know it's a whole lot of work, but it's very, very appreciated.
Mr. Fleury?
Yes, this year we've heard a lot about Lyndhurst and the air conditioning, but there's a lot of positive things going on that I've noticed when I've been out there. And actually, some of the teachers have stopped me and said they appreciate the district office coming out there. Ryan and Travis going out there and said they appreciated the updates and to know what's going on. One of the things at Lyndhurst is this year they're starting a Hall of Fame very similar to Yuba College, and that they're going to honor five people this year. October 29th is going to be their dinner that they're hosting in the cafe. On October 30th will be the football game in which they actually are securing an old car, and they're the five inductees this year are going to be brought out on the field. I think you'll be surprised at some of the names that they have done. As you go around and you hear that, you can look for the negative or the positive. And as I go around, I look for a lot of people that have gone above and beyond what is expected. Another thing at Lyndhurst with the football team, a lot of people don't realize that every Thursday night before the game, they are cooking a dinner for 80 to 90 kids. First time was spaghetti. Next time was enchiladas. Bob Eckert is cooking brisket this week. 2 weeks down, Mary Jane is going to be cooking her famous chili. And some of the people that have gone above and beyond that and kind of bringing that together for the community is Melanie Staniland. She loves that high school so much, and it's very obvious because I've served on a committee with her. But also the last week, somebody that went above and beyond was Elizabeth Preston. After work, she went home, and she cooked 8 cakes for the dinner the next night. And her oven would only cook one at a time, so she cooked all 8 of those cakes, which took her well into the morning. They don't do that for the recognition, but it's really nice to go around the district and see the above and beyond. Another one that did above and beyond was Lynette Abbott and her crew that put on the health fair. That night was amazing to see that. And again, they don't do it for the positive, but it's nice to let them know it was appreciated because they did do above and beyond. Also, I am so glad that we have music back in this district. We did the first part of our talent show last Saturday, and several of our students from Marysville Unified, even though it was three counties, made the first cut from 32 to 26. Next week, Saturday, they're going to go down to 20, and then they're going to do the final, I'm sorry, to 15. Then they're going to do the final the week after, and the talent is absolutely amazing. Several from the Marysville Charter Academy made the first cut, and it's amazing the talent over there. And Lenny, you helped get the word out, and we appreciated that there was a lot of people. Carrie Iles at Yuba Gardens encouraged a kid, and he was in the top four or five singing opera. So we have a lot of kids that fit these molds, and we got to have programs, and I am so glad that we're able to bring music back in this school, because we have kids that they found their niche, and they're going to succeed in that. So if you get a chance to see the final, which will be held at Yuba Gardens on the 17th of October, you will be amazed at the talent that is there. Thank you.
Mr. Harris?
No, I have just three comments.
Mr. Danable? Mr. Crawford?
Well, since I'm the only grandparent, I believe, with kids in school now,
two,
three, four, you forgot. I just would like to congratulate Mr. Ashman and Monica Oaks and the other elementary schools that had Grandparent Day last Friday. Grandparents got a chance to spend the whole morning, almost afternoon, working with the kids, and it's sort of a forgotten group. I was amazed how young some of the grandparents are until I realized that made me really old. A lot of them were saying, "Hey, Mr. Crawford." I go, "Yeah, this not looking good." But, yeah, great job, Doug, and great job, everyone else. Thank you very much.
Just to ask Madeline there, any predictions on the game Friday night?
Someone from the district is going to win.
So, the district will be the winner.
Yes, the district will be well represented.
I wanted to comment on the AFJ ROTC meeting that we had before, and the response from the community just has been so outstanding. And just to be there and see that many people show up and see how impressed they were. Hopefully we can, you know, keeping our fingers crossed, we can get that program back at Lyndhurst, because it's one of the star programs that we gave up. Okay, opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Joint Unified School. Unified Teachers Association.
Hi, I'm Inga Schlesler, president of that association. I just have a couple of yellow flags for you to be considering. On your agenda tonight under Ed Services, number 3, there's a grant award for supporting inclusive practices grant. I believe that's I think it's called full inclusion, pushing in from the SDC classes. If that's not the one, I understand that there is one, that it's a study to see about being able to have our special day class kids nearly 100% pushed into mainstream classes. And having just come from a rep council meeting where some of this is happening, some things I would like to make sure that the district keeps in mind with this is a caution about class size. If you're pushing into a class that is already at its limit, that can be a problem. And also the credentials of our teachers, because when a teacher signs that roll sheet saying that that's what their enrollment was and that that's who was attending, and they don't have the special day class student on that, but that student is attending every day, that period is in that class, the full period, 5 days a week. They're not signing the complete thing if that child's not on their roll. And they can lose their credential for signing something that's not accurate, and they're aware of it. But some do through the state, I'm not saying here, because their administrator tells them to, and they're not aware of that danger. So if you can just keep that in mind. Also, the catapult system. One of the things that came up today in our meeting that I hadn't really thought that much about is that in order for that catapult system to be effective, it has the teachers, the staff members, not just teachers, but other staff, have to use their cell phone. And they have to download the app onto their cell phone. And everybody's using their personal cell phone. And up until now, people have kind of grimaced about that and said, well, if we have to use a cell phone, why does the district buy us one? That kind of thing. But now, the willingness to use their personal cell phone in that situation is diminishing quite a bit, because with the trainings, what they have heard is that during a true lockdown situation and you're using your app, your phone that has that app on it that you're using will no longer, will be blocked, will not be able to make phone calls out. The trainers from Catapult told them that. And in the event that that's true, you're going to have a lot more people say, I'm not using my phone for that, because in the event of a lockdown system, I want to be able to call my husband. I want to be able to call where my child is going to school. I don't want to have my phone blocked. So just a couple things for everybody involved to think about there. And then one thing on Lenny Tate said, the counters.
Yes.
Yeah, that was me. In kindergarten homework, you wouldn't think that you would have a lot of trouble with kindergarten homework. But the second year now that we're doing this Go Math program, I have to teach parents what counters are. They, because of how the homework comes across and the little tiny directions at the bottom of the page, and you're supposed to put counters and draw counters, and they're, what are counters? And I've sent notes home. It doesn't work. Counters can be anything. In class, it's a two-sided little foam dot that's red on one side and yellow on the other, and we put them on things to count. And then they could be beans, it could be rocks, it could be whatever. But there is a lot of training that needs to be done for parents, so thank you for bringing that up. That's all.
Thank you. Operating Engineers Local Union 3. Okay. School Employees Association 326 and 648. Didn't mean to drive them off, honest.
They'll be back.
Okay. Association of Management and Confidential Employees and Supervisory Unit. I have no public comment cards. We need to do the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. X. Point of clarification, Inga brought up the catapult system, and yes, it does work on cell phones. It also works on iPads, and it also works on computers. And it is a tool that's available. No one is mandated to use their personal cell phones. They can certainly use a district iPad or the computer in their classroom. It's just a tool that we are offering, and as we work through the system, we'll learn more about it. But certainly at this point in time, it has received some very positive reviews in the event of an emergency. And we certainly hope we don't ever have to put it into practice, but it is, again, a tool that's available, not mandated to be used by any particular teacher. I've gone to a few of the trainings, and the same kinds of questions have come, not questions, but the question about using my personal phone, and I do know that the presenter has said it's a tool. If you want to use your cell phone, you have that ability. If you choose not to, that's also your choice. And with that, I'm going to turn the rest of my reporting time over to the quarterly facilities and energy management update, which Ryan DiGiulio, Cynthia Jensen and I believe Scott Lane will be presenting to the board in an overview. Just please know that if you have questions and if he's going too quickly through the slides, speak up before he gets too far ahead in the slides, and I'm sure they'll be happy to answer your questions until you are satisfied that you have all the information. Mr. DiGiulio.
All right, good evening. Thank you. Tonight we're presenting an update, so a lot of it is similar information to what we've shared before, updated numbers, updated details. I'll be presenting with myself and, as Dr. Todd said, with Cynthia Jensen, our Director of Facilities and Energy Management, as well as Scott Lane, our Executive Director of Maintenance Operations and Transportation. This presentation was provided to you. It's 59 slides. I'm not going to go through every word on every slide. We're going to go through it rather quickly, but if there's any slide that you want us to talk about in further depth, please feel free to interrupt us. So for us, we're going through a multitude, as you can see, from bond projects all the way down to our energy management efforts. So all the different pots of funding as well as the different initiatives we're doing. So going into bonds, just looking at our overall encumbrances, we're closing out our last bond, that Measure P that came out in 2008. So it was down to $153,000 in encumbrances. When you look at that total based on our cash balance, it's down to about $12,000. So it is wrapping up. Combined with Fund 35, which we're looking at the availability of funding, we may have upwards of $154,000 to spend on different facility projects. We haven't earmarked that for anything, but it is available. Going into projects, I'll turn it over to Cynthia, and she can give you a little more detail.
Good evening. It's good to be here. I'll give an update on some of the current bond projects. That's what I'll start with here. This is Ella, and these figures will look familiar, but they are updated as of September 10th. And I believe Ella will drop off our future presentations, given that it's closed. With certification with DSA and all the costs are now in. With the exception of maybe a little bit of Department of Industrial Regulation fees for prevailing wage, but I don't anticipate that being much at all. These are some of the last items that we did at Ella as the project wrapped up. This spring, we installed a monument sign. The grounds folks assisted in putting up the barricades for safety. And we had a contractor do a tree removal, some grading, and hydro seeding. And as for Foothill, this is the cost to date as of September 10th. We'll have additional costs come in. You can see the low bid amount is more than the total cost spent to date. So it's an additional amount for the hard cost plus some additional soft cost. These are photos of the project during construction. It was an enormous project.
On the additional cost of Foothill, how much more do you think is coming in?
The difference between the construction fees that are listed there and the like the fourth line down of 196.07 and the low bid amount of 276 would be the difference there to be paid.
Okay.
And then maybe some more engineering fees and a couple more other building costs.
Okay.
But
thank
minimal.
You.
Yeah, and that's under the encumbrances I talked about in Fund 23.
Okay. Thank you.
And then there is one change order number one of one tonight on the consent calendar as well. So again, this was during construction, and this is what it looked like afterward. Don't see much above ground, but it was a big project, and it's fully functional, including the maintenance piece, ongoing maintenance. Agreement is in place, and we're going in to close out to get the as-built and the O&Ms from the engineer. Now on to other sources of funding.
As you can see, we have some carryover and deferred maintenance. We put $820,000 a year as part of our LCAP starting last year, so we have 1.2 available. We're currently programming projects for that through 15-16. We have a routine restricted maintenance, about $2 million. We spent about $2 million last year, so we anticipate to fully expend that, or close to. General fund one-time money, we talked about this last time. We have some projects that are already allocated or assigned out of our Indian fund balance. This one-time money, we have about 4.1, with a majority of that will likely go to Lyndhurst High School. 2.2 million in Prop 39, where we have to put applications and projects in loop for that. So the first project will be the Linda Prop 39 HVAC project. And then there's also some Prop 39 money for MCAA, but that's in a separate fund. So going into the one-time projects, we'll turn it back to Cynthia.
Like Kovalad, like Foothill and the other projects, this is the spent to date amount as of September 10th. Additional fees will be reported on our next quarterly update. Here's the before photo of Kovalad in the frontage there this spring. And here's what it looks like afterward. It's fully functional at this time with the exception of the intercoms, which are currently being programmed. And then we'll collect the as-builts and the O&Ms for closeout and certification with the SA. South Lyndhurst. Again, this is a snapshot of cost to date as of September 10th. We'll report back next quarter with the updates. Here's a picture before we started construction. And here's what it looks like afterward. So it's far cleaner than it was to begin with. It's fully functional. We're in closeout now. A future project that was sort of a surprise is a pre-2006 portable project that got constructed but never closed with certification for DSA, so that'll be a future project that we're going to have to program, scope, and build a budget for. Looks like you have a question, maybe.
Well, it never got closed out. So the project went through DSA, but to do all the closeout measures, sometimes DSA has some comments and stuff. So we have a very tentative budget in mind, and we'll likely have to fund this out of the one-time discretionary money. But these types of things, when you have a very robust facilities program, they occur, and you have to close them out, or things like unexpected things or things that you hope hold on for a longer time don't. So that's why, well, you'll see where we get in the end. But, there's projects, a lot of projects were closed out, but some weren't, and some require some work to close them out officially. But they went through DSA approval.
Yeah, it would just be the certification, the closeout process that wasn't completed properly in 2006 or whenever. They were installed. I can't pinpoint the date exactly, but we do have a scope. We have a set of drawings to get us close with certification, and we've actually walked the site with a contractor to get their estimate. We have the inspector's estimate because a DSA inspector will be required, along with a structural engineer. So it's underway. We'll have more details next quarter when we bring the update. And this is the infamous Lyndhurst and part of the central plant. We are in with DSA for the final review and approval tomorrow. We should have an update for that. Don't anticipate any more comments. And so then we will be moving forward with bid and then construction. So we're underway for starting with the CNF buildings, and then we'll program for future increments.
Yeah, so currently we're getting approval on the plans to do the entire system for the campus, but increment one will be CNF. Those are the areas of need, and as funding becomes available, we'll branch out to the other portions of campus.
And the PA was approved for the entire scope, but the first increment will be just designed for increment one only, just to clarify that a little bit. As funds allow, we will be addressing the gas line and quad area of Lyndhurst, and it's likely to include some ADA-related improvements from the main driveway to the campus.
And when we talked about most of the one-time discretionary money going to Lyndhurst. It will be on the HVAC project increment one, and this is cost-intensive. Currently, we have a floating budget of a little over $2.5 million on this alone.
So it looks as though we have a picture of the bus circle also. So is that included in this quad repair?
Well, that's the ADA path of travel from the main parking lot. And often when you do a new project and you're going to make improvements that are DSA reviewed and approved, they will require some ADA improvements.
So there may be some part of the project that touches a portion of it, but not the bus loop itself, not in the project. That's a separate project.
OK, Okay, on the school site funded projects, we completed one at Lyndhurst this summer. It was a shade canopy. You see some details here. And a future site funded project will be the charter school portable addition. And we're actually scoping that and developing the budget and moving into the design phase, and a PA will be coming forth shortly. Here's a before and after photo of Lyndhurst, quad area where the shade canopy was constructed. And here's the site we're anticipating installing the portables for the charter school, up to two with infrastructure for a third.
Turn it over to Scott Lane now to explain some of the summer projects. I know this is not quite the scope of the facility projects, but there was a lot done during the summer by our staff.
Yes, we did get a lot done this summer. The comments were made in maintenance that we've never had so many work orders done in a summertime. We put, just like we had talked about, we put the people working and all of them working collectively toward one goal, and I think it worked out very good for us. One of the really good things we did was, with Romero's guidance, we brought some sub people in for some painting crews, and we had two painting crews that worked all summer. That allowed us to keep our costs down and get a lot of the little projects done that we wouldn't have been able to if we'd have contracted it out with local painters. This is one of Kathy Wood's projects. It's a grant over at Kovalod for the preschool. They pretty much tore the whole floor out, did the painting on the sides. The countertops, the sinks, and the drinking faucets were all lowered so that the little guys wouldn't have to get onto a stool to get up and get a drink out of the faucet. And then we put the low toilets in for the little guys. So that it worked out really good. The guys did a really good job on it. We're real happy with it. Doug was one of the guys that worked on that, but this team of painters that we had went in to do the touch-up work on that, and I think it worked out really good for us. This is the dental van at Ella School. We pulled shoreline power in so that we don't have to run an auxiliary generator. That saves a lot for a lot of people. The mechanics, when they set up, they don't have to go cone everything off, or we have an auxiliary exhaust coming out of it. It's a lot quieter, and it's a lot healthier environment there where we don't have to worry about all the exhaust and everything on it. It worked out really good. The people on the dental van, they can hear themselves think. We don't have any problems with it. In addition to that, we don't have to have the dental van serviced as often because we don't have that generator service. So we just plug it in and go. It's worked out really good for us. Again, that's a project that helped us. It helped all the people on the dental van, and it really helped the mechanics out from shuffling this thing back and forth. The next is Johnson Park. They installed a scrolling marquee and a cat line. While they were there, they went ahead and did some refresh, so they painted, did some more countertops in the office there. If you haven't been out to the offices of the schools, I'd encourage you to go out and take a look. They look a lot better. For the amount of money that we spent, we got a lot of bang for our buck there. This is Linda Elementary. Here we did an office refresh. It's got the new furniture. We did flooring, pulled all of those counters, old antique counters out of there, put the new furniture in. The ladies are really happy with it. It worked out really good. There, again, we used the same group of painters. We put them in there. Saves us money and gets more work done. While we were at Linda Elementary, we had a drain problem out front. The comment last year from one of the ladies in the office was, it's backed up water more than it has in 15 years. So it kind of tells you something's going on there. We dug up the drain. We had a collapsed pipe and a terrible drain system. So we dug it up, got it all out of there. And then we had a bunch of tree roots in that quad. We had some trees we need to get out of there. That's kind of been an ongoing project and something that you'll see in the future. We're partnering with PG&E. We're trying to get a lot of the trees, these old mistletoe dying trees, and then we have the problem from the drought. So we're trying to get a lot of those trees out of here with the cost being the least we can possibly spend. So coupling with PG&E's worked out really good for that. At Linda, it helped out a lot. We'll be able to get some grass out in the middle of that quad. It's a work in progress, but it looks really good. I'm real happy with the guys' work. And again, this is a place where we have maintenance out there, we have grounds out there, and the custodians, everybody working toward that common goal, trying to keep the dirt that we're tracking in, you know, into the classrooms. So Ed's involved in that. Mo's out there trying to figure out how we get our drain and everything to work. Maintenance guys did an outstanding job under Travis, getting out there, getting the thing dug up, and figuring out what we had. So it's just that collaboration of everybody, but it worked really well for us. The Lyndhurst High, the culinary classroom, this was an interesting project. The timelines, and then it was one of those things where it's changing all the time. This was an all hands on deck. Everybody that works for us worked there at some point, having everybody there trying to get the job done. I think it worked. It came along really good. I think the expectations were changing from time to time, so it was a little frustrating. But when we got toward the end there, I think it looks real good. If you get a chance to go out there and look at it, it's pretty impressive. This is Lyndhurst High. This is actually the pig farm. We did the cement in-house. All of our guys are out there. We have a pour. We write it on a board. Everybody gets out there and gets after it. And it's okay to complain at the end of the day that you're getting old and sore. But they did it. We ran water down there so they can hose all the pigs and everything off. It made it first cabin. Really nice area. And again, it was everybody working collectively. We had grounds guys, maintenance guys. It really works a lot better with everybody working together. Lyndhurst High, here we removed the lockers, did some painting, did the flooring. Again, here we have maintenance. You know, we're getting the quotes and things, getting them out there to check the job. But the custodian's involved in it too. Ed's out there to look at the flooring. Is this appropriate for what we need? We have some flooring that we're not very happy with, so we're trying to get that right up front. Let's get everybody there to take a look at it. It came out really clean and really nice looking. One of the problems over the summer was we put off so many flooring projects where we had linoleum going in or we had carpet. We had all these little projects. Well, with the people that we had on the contract list to come in and do the carpet, we had more work than they could do. So since then, we've tried to line up with some other contractors so we can piece some things out a little bit different and get more stuff done. This is one of the things where you spend your money for your flooring, getting everything painted up. Again, it's the best bang for your buck. That's what people see when they get there. And I think that's the curb appeal that people want to see. Lyndhurst High, this is the ventilation. You guys have probably heard more about this than you want to hear, but the ventilation fans were all put in. We put six of them in the C building there. Maintenance guys did a great job. Those guys were out there doing the work. A lot of the people are really stepping up to the plate. You know, at the end of the day, they've done a good job. They go home and feel good about it. That's what we were looking for. Marysville High, this 12-inch water break right here is just a splendid example of everybody working together. This is actually it's irrigation line that broke off that 12-inch. When we got there, you know, we had a giant puddle, didn't know what we had. The only parts we could get, the clamps to fix that, were in Stockton. So we couldn't get them till the next day. So we didn't go that way. We had three guys with cell phones going, and we had dispatch, Don and dispatch, calling the warehouses. And we were able, by picking up one piece of each of the clamps and the pieces that we needed, we got one piece from each one of the warehouses that are over in Yuba City. We were able to get everything we needed. So the guys stayed late, didn't have to shut anything down. We worked on it till about 7 that night. But you had everybody. You've got grounds guys in the hole digging along with the maintenance guys. Everybody pitching in trying to get that done. Things like that are good for us. You know, we get a good end product when we're done. The locker room carpet there looked nice and clean. You know, should last us quite a while. It's a good install. We have people out there watching while it's being installed. And then the proper people getting by when we're done to make sure they're done with it and that we're happy with it. The clamp over here where we had the break, actually what happened there was the last contractor that was in there misaligned the pipe. But apparently nobody checked it or it settled. You know, it's at an angle like this. You can see why it leaked. Those are the kind of things we're going to have people on the ground out there looking at it. That's what we have to have. It behooves us to check before we ever put any dirt over anything. But that project was, a couple guys said that was a lot of fun because everybody's running around like a chicken with their head cut off trying to get the thing fixed. It worked out really good for us, though. McKinney, the HVAC, this is working in cooperation with facilities. This is one of Cynthia and Travis projects. Our guys in-house did the wiring, got it all hooked up. Just a good project, everybody working together. The Oliphurst Elementary, the office there worked out really good. We moved it. I don't know who all seen it so far, but we moved it down to the other end. It came along really good. We tore everything out. We had a lot of people working on it. There were the windows, old antique windows that looked terrible. People thought we didn't know how to wash windows. That wasn't it. It was just they were so old. Kentar. We had just about everybody on that project, too, at some point. All the painting crew, all the carpenters. We put the tack board and everything in. It came along. They were real, real happy with it. Every time I was out there, Jimmy was just grinning from ear to ear. It's another project where everybody worked together, and it worked out really well. The South Lyndhurst, the offices there, they actually built an office inside the portable, which worked out really good. But again, it's our guys, in-house guys, doing the work. We had a couple of guys out there. Gordon and John did a good job. The computer lab, we had Eric and Saul hooking up all the wire, running all the electrical for everything. Quite complex to put the wiring in for one of these computer labs. But they've really got it down pat, did a good job. Yuba Feather, we had so much dry rot on the side of the building, just falling off. That's Kentar up there, changing out all of the siding on it, just did a great job of it. With the guys that we have, we got a lot of talent, and we're using that talent right now, so there's a lot of things that we can do. Real happy with them, real happy with all the supervisors right now. Picking up Travis was a great thing. The other supervisors we have, everybody being over in one office, where when we have a project that comes in, everybody's on it right then. It's real apparent what everybody's doing, so nobody's worried about what somebody else isn't doing with everybody there. So it's worked out really good for us, I think. We still have a long ways to go, but we're definitely moving in the right direction and getting there. Yuba Gardens Intermediate here, we took out the portable. Old, dilapidated. This is what we left. You see the black tops patched. It's not in the past when we got done with the project. If we weren't going to go any further, we didn't necessarily pick everything up and clean it up, especially some of the irrigation projects. If you see some of the stuff that was left, and well, we're going to go back later and finish it. This kind of that little black top right there, and now in the fall, we'll go back and change out the siding on the side of the building there. But we're keeping the stuff clean. We're preaching that curb appeal to everybody. That's what they need to be looking at when they're out there on the jobs. It takes every guy. You know, and it's okay now if a grounds guy sees something that's a maintenance thing, it's not a na-na-na thing, it's a hey, you know, here's a heads up that doesn't look right. Maybe we can get somebody on it. And it's working really good for us. I believe that's my last slide. Thank you very much.
Okay, for the next section, I'd just like to point out that we have been collaborating since I got here, and this is a joint effort between Scott and all of his supervisors, Ryan, myself, and my department. So this list will continue to change, grow, be modified, be updated. So we've taken just, you know, a first go at a longer list, a very long list of needs. Starting with the first three items here, you could see that these are actually board approved and scheduled to happen. And then there are additional items that have not yet been budgeted or programmed or scoped fully, but they are on the short list of a long list.
All the projects you see there, some of them smaller, but the Marysville High School kitchen HVAC replacement, that will happen. And we'll likely split fund the HVAC for the CNF at Lyndhurst. Some of it will come out of deferred maintenance, and some of it will come out of the one-time discretionary.
And here's a sample of one of those projects that's currently scheduled for November. Our contractor needs a full 40 hours, is what they're anticipating, in order to properly clean this entire storm drain system, which you could see here, just one part of it is almost completely plugged. So that work will happen in November over the break. And here's the Marysville kitchen HVAC replacement. This is in design currently. We will be moving that forward and hope to do the construction over the summer. This is the ongoing needs assessment list. It's multi-year. And as you see the status, and we have like a year there, that could change. It's all based on funding availability. But you have a scope and an idea of just the vast needs in the district. This list goes on and on. I won't go into the detail. You have it in front of you to read at your leisure. It does include something for a lot of schools, including Foothill. Lyndhurst has a lot of items, and then just some district-wide items like the bus barn. And trees in our district, we have a lot of need to do trimming and removal. Scott mentioned earlier. partnering with only PG&E, but also with various local contractors. Okay, moving on to Prop 39 for the district and the charter school. These are restricted funds, and they're different pots of money. You can see we're starting with Lyndhurst HVAC. That is almost 100% complete. We have a DSA exemption. We paid the fees to have that concur that it is exempt, so that's a good thing. Marysville Charter, with a small district or a small school with low enrollment, we're able to apply for year two and three funds without submitting a plan. So those funds should be in our budget here shortly. And then the remaining two through six are just some items that we plan to do in terms of future scope and projects. And energy management, we have completed 2 out of 4 hours of training on the energy management system software that gives us our baseline and continue to track our usage and cost over the years. While we were out at sites this summer doing our projects, we took advantage of the time that we were there and did energy audits and shutdowns. You can see some of the items there specifically. And we will do ongoing data entry input from the utility bills, and I would like to thank Jennifer and her staff for helping us input the data. And we're testing new LED lamps and hope to make that a district standard. It'll save the money and also improve the lighting.
Thank you. You'll see more of our efforts on energy management as the other projects start to wind down, but the list, the projects that we're programming right now are only a fraction of the list of projects. The things you see on the deferred maintenance, that's not an exhaustive list. There's much more than that. Our project list goes on for pages. And for 1516, we're looking, we got to address the immediate needs. You can see the things that are getting programmed at Linda. Linda is part of Prop 39, but Lyndhurst, those two items, they're definitive needs. Some of the smaller projects are definitive needs. Marysville High School, the cafeteria and the HVAC there and the kitchen. The one-time discretionary dollars have been very helpful. We're going to be able to maximize those to fully fund facility projects that we have for 1516. However, we really need to look at the long term. We're working on a facilities master plan process. We're doing pre-planning is underway. We have another meeting with our team, considering some outside consultants, some of the district staff, on October 1st. Our plan is to, the end goal is to bring a plan to the board in April, May, likely May. The plan will feature an annual plan, and we're going to make it like a living document, something like the budget, where every year you'll see what have we tackled on the plan, what do we still have out, are there any new projects that need to be added, and so forth. It's a 5 to 20-year plan with a extreme focus on the 5 years. There will also be stakeholder involvement. We want to get people's opinions, including the board itself. We need to really know what the priorities based on goals are for the board. And so there'll be a study session. There'll be involvement of the board members. We'll look at our demographics, specifically site by site. Some sites are growing, some aren't. We'll look at education and facility specs. We'll try to have standards for what we want to put in our buildings from, obviously, a construction standpoint, but also from our program standpoint. And then we'll look at also funding needs and options and other things, too, like we'll look at our surplus property and asset management. But there's a lot more to come. We're programming for 1516, but we will have a plan by the end of this fiscal year, and that will start showing everybody here is exactly what we're planning on doing. There are obviously emergencies arise and things change, but for the most part, you know, our goal is to plan just like we do with our budget. We want to spend according to that plan. We want to do our projects according to that plan. So you'll see more, and we'll provide more updates likely next quarter, final quarter of this calendar year. Any questions or follow-up on this information?
For me, it's really nice to see the maintenance and the custodial and grounds and everybody working together to get all these projects completed instead of saying, well, no, we can't do that. Now they're all working together, which is just, I think it's phenomenal.
It's not perfect yet. Obviously, no, it's not operating at the level that we have high expectations, yeah. You know, for our students and our staff. We want to create optimal facilities on all levels, but you got to start somewhere, and we're moving that, you know, and Scott and his supervisors are doing a great job. The staff's doing a great job, but you know we're still going to continue to try to get better and better.
That's better for the students. It's better for the schools, the staff, administration. You know, it makes them have an easier job. So you know, I think it's just great.
I, I definitely want to say their job is the facilities challenges in this district are vast. So hopefully we'll get funding from other sources too when we talk about the state and stuff. School districts like ours that have many aging facilities, that's why the things that occur at our campuses, we try to avoid them. We're definitely trying to get more on the preventative side too. So we're going to program our school dude application to have more preventative maintenance. But there's a lot of need. When the list comes final and we have a full needs assessment come May, I think it will surprise a lot of you.
How many, you used to farm out quite a bit in that department. How much has that decreased, would you guess, internally from what they were farming out last year?
Well, I mean, we just started this fiscal year, so I have to compare maybe 14, 15, 13, 14. So when we get full statistics, we'll know. But it's definitely, I've noticed, I haven't been signing as many, you haven't seen as many of those public works contracts come to you and whatnot. So it's at least cut in half, if not more, since I've noticed.
You know, overall,
since I've been on the board, Scott's presentation and yours and everyone else's, where you could see, I'm a visual person, the before and after. Well done. That's you'd always have the hearsay and the innuendo this way. Hey, here it is. Quit your complaining. We got our guys together. I really liked your analogy with the guys staying around till 7 o'clock, the way you work the cell phones and bringing the people in. Well done. Please tell your people. Thank you.
I'm definitely a visual learner, so I'd like to give credit to Ms. Jensen. I know she catalogs a lot of the projects with the photos, and that's something we want to show people what we're doing, not just talking about it. We want to show people.
I think one of the things that is easy to do, and you know, everybody works in their separate jobs, it's the teamwork that goes into making a school successful and the kids successful. Okay. And that goes for everybody in food service and the custodians and everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, if that's it, how about we move on to approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 9/8/15. Okay, Mr. Crawford moves to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Daniel seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Okay. Consent agenda. Would anybody like anything removed from the consent agenda or pulled? Okay, Mr. Harris moves to approve the consent. Is there a second? Mr. Boom seconds the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Unanimous? And that brings us to new business, Educational Services Resolution 2015-1607, availability of textbooks and instructional materials. And this is set aside to hold a public hearing. So I'll open the public hearing. Anyone care to comment? Mr. Boom moves to close the public hearing.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, now we need a motion to approve the resolution.
Make a motion to approve.
Mr. Crawford moves to approve. Is there a second? Oh, no. We'll get Mr. Fleury this time. Mr. Fleury seconds the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
And unless I'm mistaken, that's it.
That's your time.